So how did we get this started? We're three Eagle Scouts who were all in the same troop and patrol, the Wolverine Patrol, hence the name of the podcast. And Tim had the brilliant idea to come together about how our experiences have shaped us in our hatred for capitalism.
Exactly. So, you know, so much of the leftist podcast world is a world of people living in New York and out on the coast and stuff. And I think what really inspired me was a group in Kentucky called the Trillbilly Workers Party, who kind of do like the Chapo thing, but like very much like focus on like the South and like the rural poverty they live around and stuff. And, you know, living in the Rust Belt, living that, that decrepit capitalist, shithole life, you know, it shaped us as the All-American Kids, I think. So maybe we're the new All-American Kids. I don't know.
Not only that, but, like, going from living in sort of the northern suburbs where we met and grew up and graduated from high school, and then all of us now living in, the major cities and where the decline is a lot more right in your face and present, you know?
Yeah. But it's funny because even, like, where we grew up in Mason, like, you know, yeah, it is, like, a super upper-middle-class area, but, like, the rural poverty that was there before we got there never left.
No.
Nope, absolutely so still there.
The suburbs are really bleak, especially in the Midwest, because you go to school with kids who drive fucking Mustangs to school that their parents just got them when they were 16, and then you see kids that, like, have to be on a free lunch program because their parents can't afford to feed them. And I think somewhere along the line, it was just too much, and I think it just kind of hit all of us at some point, I think, that it was like, huh, there's no real reason for the world to work like this. It's not really sustainable or good. So here we are. Marks and Eagles, baby. you know, on our honor, we will, you know, say fuck capitalism or whatever. God. Yeah, yeah.
That's still playing in my head right now, on my honor.
I'll do my best. Yeah, I know. It's in your head forever, man. And, you know,
it's in there.
You know, and it's really funny because, you know, so much of this is like our experience being in Boy Scouts for so many years and stuff. And I've thought about it a lot where, like, the Boy Scouts is such like a politically conservative organization. But, like, the actual stuff you do in the Boy Scouts is pretty conducive to, like, kind of left-leaning collectivist thought. Every job's elected. Everybody has to do work. Everything's done pretty much democratically, and it's all about cooperation with each other. And, like, how that became the organization of the political right is very strange to me. You know? I don't know. Like, how did that happen, you think? The churches?
I don't know. That's a good question, but I guess if you look historically back at when it first started, I mean, that could also be pre-Civil Rights era. When it kind of came together, and, you know, there's the
old organizations don't really like to change.
Yeah, the famous realignment during the civil rights. You talk about that, so, you know, could have started off slightly left leaning and kind of remained that way. Slight, I don't know.
That could have, yeah, that's absolutely true. I don't know. What do you think, Jag?
I don't know. I think as a military prep organization, which is definitely how it started out.
Oh, for sure.
You know, the seed of being a right-wing organization was planted there from the start just because of its original purpose. I think that it definitely taught us a lot about how a really democratic organization could work and could run, and kind of it gets you in that idea that that does work and is a good way to organize people. But I think that also it's important as adult leftists to know how to navigate those socially conservative spaces, because there's a lot of skills that we would need to survive and to foment revolution and to do those things. That is, the intellectual territory is almost exclusively the property of the right when it comes to anything violent per se, or even in a survival type of situation.
Yeah,
that's just like, rife with political conservatism.
Yeah, like, I mean, you don't see a lot of you know, kind of city liberals going camping, going fishing, going hunting, which is not something you can do in the Scouts anymore. But beside the point, yeah, I absolutely do think that we're not going to get anywhere real fast if we don't know how to do things once the infrastructure collapses. And I would argue in some ways that may be the most valuable thing we learned in the Scouts, you know, despite it coming around to the politics we had, which, I mean, like I've said, I don't think it's in spite of it. I really don't. Like, I think that that organization, despite not trying to instill anti-capitalist values in me, definitely did, because it was like, you know, well, then why is any part of society not structured like this? It works, clearly. It organizes people pretty efficiently. I don't know.
So, yeah, I have a quick question.
Yeah.
So, to butt in, I was never a Boy Scout.
Yeah.
Ever. I was never part of that troop. However, for some reason, I keep getting targeted ads on Facebook. And I don't know, I don't remember hearing much about this in the news, if this was an issue. But I keep getting targeted ads about, like, victim of Boy Scout abuse, contact us, and we can help you.
Yeah.
Was that a thing? I don't remember reading about
okay,
it.
Okay, so here. Yes, it was. Within, I want to make sure I get, like, most of the details of this right. A lot, kind of in the way that, like, the Catholic Church had its comeuppance, you know, 20 years ago and sporadically since, a lot of old case files and stuff, and a lot of people came forward regarding abuse in the Boy Scouts, mostly from, like, decades ago, like, before they really instituted, like, youth protection training and, like, those kind of things. So now it's just kind of this thing where, like, all of these people are coming forward and doing this massive class action lawsuit against the Scouts. And I believe the Boy Scouts actually ended up having to file for bankruptcy, if I'm not mistaken.
They did, yeah.
So that they could rework their finances and survive. Now, it's important to remember that the Boy Scouts have been on the decline in membership since, like, 1975. Like, that was the peak at about 10 million, and it's down to, I think it's well less than 2 million now. I think it was about 2 million when we were in, and that was a decade ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why they've changed so rapidly on some social issues in the last couple of years. You know, they've started letting gay youth in, and then they started letting gay adults in, and then they started letting, you know, trans people in, and now they're letting girls in, and it's actually going to become a fully co-ed program. You know, do you guys, I mean, I guess this is a stupid question, but do you think those things are related in some way? I think some of it was probably they needed the money from the big corporations, but some of it was just like, you've got to be a bigger tent when your organization's dying. So what do you guys think?
I think that's a big part of it. I think they were pushing for a long time because you had the separate venture crews where you could have girls that were interested in a lot of the high adventure stuff and, you know, getting that camaraderie when the Girl Scouts weren't necessarily doing that on their own. I, you know, you see a lot of that too, where it's like you have Girl Scout troops where the girls are really tight knit, but they don't really do many scout like activities. They might just have like little parties, or they might go camping in a hotel or something like that, but they don't do any of the same stuff that the boys do. So the girls that did want to go do that were getting that opportunity through Venture Crew. So right. It made sense to just go ahead and merge it together.
Right.
But also you bring up the good point that I think that was a big factor, is that they are having a lot of decline since the 70s, and it was about time. Otherwise, they, you know, the program could go extinct.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I felt like the whole thing with allowing gay youth was just really bad window dressing, because let me tell you, there were always gay youth in the Boy Scouts.
Kidding.
Like, and everybody knew it. I never knew any, I mean, we grew up in Ohio, like maybe this happens in other places, but I never knew anybody to kick a youth out of the program because they were gay or because they were suspected of being gay.
Right. Now, it did happen quite a few other places, unfortunately. You know, it was very, it was isolated cases of it for sure, because there was always outrage. Like, it wasn't something that, like, National was really strictly enforcing on a wide scale, but, like, it was a thing, and it was a thing that you could get somebody removed from the program if you made a stink about. So I think that was, you know, it was smart, but, like, also, I mean, you follow the money, baby. Like, AT&T, I think, was it AT&T was ready to pull, or Intel, I think, was ready to pull their donation, you know, their annual donation, like, They were lined up to lose some pretty serious money over that. So, and then we can't forget, I think it would be, we'd be remiss not to bring up the organization that sprouted from the membership change, Trail Life USA. Do you guys remember that heap of shit?
Actually, not too familiar with it.
So no, I don't know how well it's come. I'm actually going to pull it up because I'm curious. It was basically the organization that split off from the Boy Scouts when they started letting gay youth in. And let's see, what are their membership numbers like? Keeping in mind the Boy Scouts have been, you know, in decline. Oh, well, 26,000 members. So they're going to overtake the Boy Scouts any day. And, yeah, that's really, wow, that's really...
So we found all the places where that did happen, where gay youth got kicked out and they all left immediately. We identified 26,000 of them. And there they are.
There they are. Yeah, dude. No, leaving the Boy Scouts over some shit like that is pretty yay.
Yeah.
If I do say so myself. No, it was a very weird time because I was actually involved in activism on that level when that was happening. And, you know, it was getting much easier than it had been in previous years to make a huge stink about it. It got to the point where groups like HRC or like Scouts for Equality, the group that did it, could go to these organizations and be like, hey, this is what the Boy Scouts do and this is going to make you look bad. So, you know, and it was, you know, I don't know how sustainable that is as like a organizing method long term, like for other things. Like, I mean, you're not going to be, I think we've all acknowledged you're not going to be able to boycott your way out of the reactionary kind of situation that is capitalism. No. But I'm glad it worked in this case, I guess.
Yeah.
I think we're rapidly approaching kind of a critical mass where that organizing is mostly done. A lot of the major corporations have appropriately put up, you know, all the banners that they need to put up every June for LGBT inclusion. And,
yep.
Oh, we're so friendly to this group. And, you know, same thing happens in February for Black History Month. They have all learned to kind of talk the talk. It's no longer... Well, it's interesting because even as the white working class seems to be becoming more and more reactionary, in general,
yeah,
the big corporations are still choosing not to cater to that yet. And I think it'll be interesting to see when that changes
if it changes. I don't know that it will change in like a way that's immediately recognizable to people. Like they'll have to, they're still, because everything's so online now and it's so easy to kick up outrage, they are going to have to be sly about how they do it, I think. It's going to be really unnerving when it starts happening, though. They kind of just slowly go in like a more politically conservative direction. Yeah, it's going to be really weird.
Yeah, like, I mean, you see, like, especially, like, beer companies. You'll see them starting to do that.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, we're not just here to attack the white working class. We're really not here to attack the white working class at all. If there's one thing that we've also united in our hatred of, besides capitalism, it is dumbass liberals who have no real intention of changing anything or making the world a better place. They just kind of want to put a nice big smiley face sticker on Empire and are going to do it by any means. And that would be much scarier if they weren't so hilariously incompetent and stupid and just unable to realize anything. So I have a reading here that I would like to go through a little bit and, you know, get your guys' reactions. It's from Vice. It was written by a guy named Kevin Truong. And the headline is, "A queer indigenous professor who died of COVID-19 did not actually exist." Now, you know, I grew up in a house with a professor. I grew up around professors. I went to college. I wish I could say this was surprising, but it's not. The academic class, man, they're an interesting bunch, to say the least. You know, they tend to be more progressive, but not always in the most helpful of ways, I guess. I don't know. Like, it's hard to really explain that fully, but, like, they definitely... People talk about the ivory tower in academia, and I really do think that does things to people's brains a little bit.
I think so. That meme of the guy his brain is so big that he's sitting on it and it's a throne, and then it turns into a fucking palanquin that he's walking around on in the shape of an elephant because he's got such a massive brain. That's kind of what makes me, what I think of.
Absolutely.
The Rage comic style.
Yeah, or the one where he's like a hot air balloon.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like floating around like, you know, Jules Verne and some shit. Like, it's pretty good. So I'll get started here. A popular Twitter account claiming to be run by a queer indigenous Arizona State University professor who died of COVID-19 on Friday was an elaborate an elaborate catfishing hoax. Though the account called Science_by had gained some renown in Twitter science circles, the professor does not seem to have existed at all. Do you guys think that would have been hard to check?
No, not really, because you can go figure out, like, you can just look at, I mean, I've done it before when I'm trying to do reviews on professors from our university that we went to.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to find out about the faculty and staff that work at any large school.
Yeah, you can literally see how much they get paid on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, you can literally look this woman's salary up. If she's real.
Yep.
I mean, that's... So the idea that, like, nobody thought to, like, look this up. And then, like...
That's people, just surface level, too. That's without hardly doing any real digging. You got... That's just basic elementary school level. Go on the internet and Google a couple things for a couple minutes.
Absolutely. God forbid,
you could make a couple of phone calls.
Yeah.
To really check into it. You know?
Yeah, especially like any journalist. Part of an organization and an institution... That, like, you know, you're representing on the internet in these interactions, like, you think.
I will say this, you do have to keep in mind, the reason, you know, if you're, this is just seems to be a random user on Twitter, why would you ever think to, like, well, why do I need to dig into this person is real, whatever.
It's just that's a good point.
This only happens as soon as it all came to light.
Yeah.
Which as soon as they found out, which is going to beg into the question, like, why would you take it this far when what you guys are saying is true? It's very simple. So they had to know this was going to happen.
Yeah. Which is, like, I mean, I think that, you know, that just proves the predictability of the whole thing, that, like, it's easy to dupe, like, Twitter libs, I guess. Like, it's just not a challenging thing. It is low-hanging fruit. I guess my big question here, before I can continue with this, is, like, why? Why would somebody, what was the point of this? What, like, I get, like, you know, fucking with people on the internet for, like, you know, because, like, then Kamala Harris puts all her resources into that and loses the election, you know, or whatever. But, like, what do you gain from, like, trolling Twitter nerds? Like,
I don't know, but I have kind of an idea going back a little bit about the Twitter liberals falling for that kind of shit. It's slightly hypocritical because, you know, we always, and everybody... slightly left or progressive will always rip on people who are right-leaning for not doing their research and just spouting off any bullshit they see from Fox News or anything conservative whatsoever, and they'll just see some grandpa post his meme and then take it to heart, and then, you know, say that's not true, why aren't you doing your research? Well, then they create their own little network of people that they think are not doing the same things either. And they fall for the same bullshit, too. And I think this is a really good example.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, the fact that, like, Rachel Maddow still has a career after all that Russiagate shit should prove to you that, like, liberals do not care about the truth any more than conservatives do. Right? Like, clearly.
No, but they do care about how their politics make them feel.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a big, like... Somebody who wanted to troll Twitter libs could do it so easily because all one would have to do is figure out what are the current special interest groups that the liberals have latched onto as being important or as, oh, we need to center these voices just to make ourselves feel like we're including people from outside of our zone of privilege. You know, and absolutely. So it's like, oh, well, I'm going to make up this caricature of this person who fits all of these different criteria, literally just to own the libs, and there is no deeper meaning than that. You know, they just want to point out, like you said, the low-hanging fruit of how vapid and kind of emotional and without substance that politic is.
Right, and I mean, I think it goes no further. I mean, you really look no further than, like, talk to any lib about, like, genuinely challenging capitalism in some way. You know, it's, I know plenty of, like, well-meaning, like, adults who have voted Democrat their entire life who, like, do not understand why we need single-payer healthcare. And, like, so it's just, like, it's so obvious that, like, their politics have no material backing to them at all as, like, progressives or whatever. So it does. It all just becomes, like, this weird virtue signaling, like, well, at least I'm centering this queer, you know, Native woman who's got COVID. But, like, yeah, it's very...
It feels like the people who have been, you know, relatively progressive and left-leaning, and, you know, as the system has shifted right, have only ever been so on the outer surface level of that, whereas everything else moves surface towards the right. The shell, I guess, that they're kind of hanging on, just kind of slid along with them, and then the center of that, where it takes a little more deep thought and consideration, that's what moved left. So they're just kind of holding on, nothing supporting what they're holding on to. Their old,
their old conventions.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, just the idea that you'd be like centering a woman on a queer indigenous woman with COVID-19 on Twitter and making yourself feel good, but like, you're not interested in fighting the healthcare executives. You're not interested in fighting like the way our state treats people on reservations, and you're not fighting, you're certainly like not fucking fighting for like women's rights in many cases, or LGBT, you're not talking about the fact that like, homeless youth are still, astronomically higher if you're gay and trans. So we need to fundamentally like build enough infrastructure to deal with that. Like, that's where you lose them. It's so strange. All right, I guess I should really continue with this article now. This is going to keep happening. We are going to get sidetracked constantly. I feel like
we're doing a podcast.
It is almost like that.
It's a good podcast. It's got some tangents.
Yeah, exactly. I almost feel like I need I've been watching a lot of clips of Bar Rescue because I just need junk food TV and COVID. And you can buy on John Taffer's website a little button that goes, "Shut it down!" And I'm like, I feel like we just need that. So anytime we get too far on a tangent, somebody can just be like,
boom. We definitely need a soundboard.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
The first couple of months of COVID, all that me and Jenna would watch every night of the week was the Great British Baking Show.
Oh, fabulous.
Because I just needed to feel good at the end of these really long, uncertain days.
I got sucked. I watched the entire series over quarantine. This was my problem. I started falling in love with like a new person every season.
Yeah,
I started like planning futures with people.
Oh man! So the bake show got you falling in love.
Yeah.
From side to side.
You would think that the baking show gets you a little bit hungry, but it got you thirsty.
Yeah.
There it is, folks. Hungry, thirsty, not hungry. Stay tuned for more comedy. We're now Ohio's number one comedy podcast.
That's Bob and Tom.
Wait, are they?
No, in Indiana.
Are they in Indiana?
Yeah, they're in Indianapolis.
Oh, man. We have gotten so far off track on this article. But also, like, let's see. For months, Science and Bi had tweeted about their apparent battle with COVID-19 being forced to teach in person at Arizona State University in April. Early last week, Science Bi tweeted about needing help fighting COVID and misinformation on a COVID survivor Facebook group. The account tweeted extensively about social justice, the professor's indigenous heritage as a member of the Hopi tribe, and the LGBTQ experience in academia, and their battle with COVID-19. So, like, what was this person just like? Was this just like a white lady trying to like have woke points and thinking nobody would respect her? I don't know.
I mean, that's one theory, and I guess she thought the only way that she's going to be able to get her points, is if she kind of masquerades as someone who's marginalized, because those are going to be the people that are standing up right now. Those are the people that are actually being listened to, at least on the progressive side of things.
So the idea that this person was trying to help the libs and accidentally own the limbs in the process is so funny. That might be the funniest possibility of all of them.
Yep.
So wait, did somebody actually die?
No, nobody died.
This person was made up.
No, this person was completely
made
up.
That's like saying, like, "Mom, I shot my imaginary friend, Bobby."
He died of COVID. Bobby died of COVID, Mom. So on Friday, Bethann McLaughlin, the founder of Me Too STEM, which I'm going to guess is a Me Too organization for people in the STEM field, which is needed, announced that Sciencing Bi had died from COVID and tweeted a long thread about the impact of Sciencing Bi and what that she had on her. Who else is going to tell me that I'm not being strong enough, that the bigger fights ahead, that there are bigger fights ahead and that I have to do better? McLaughlin tweeted, "Who else is going to be there to call me out publicly for being soft on NIH or NSF? She wasn't nice. She was powerful, and she worked so stinking hard." Damn, dude. She was nice, and she worked hard. She's the hardest working imaginary woman in show business, folks. Oh, man. So we get to see if there's anything else on here that's really worth touching on, because this is so funny. And, like, it just, it keeps going. And just every, all these people from, like, all these, like, big universities are talking about it. And, oh, yeah, a lot of people are saying that this woman, McLaughlin, what was her name?
From the McLaughlin group.
From the McLaughlin group. I can't remember. But yeah, this woman McLaughlin, this is the only person who seems to have had like any personal contact with her. So like, I'm not saying we can prove that she was this woman, but like, if only one person has ever met this individual, it's kind of like Joseph Smith in the Golden Tablets. Like, he's the only one who ever saw them, and we just got to take his word for it.
Listen, I'm not saying that I know everything, but we've never seen Harrison Ford and Dennis Quaid ever in the same place or the same movie together. They're the same person.
That sounds real to me.
Yes. Okay, yeah, that sounds way more real. That's true. I mean, that's... So, yeah, I think that's really the actual takeaway here is that, you know, Dennis Quaid and Harrison Ford are the same person.
Yes.
And they're both Palestinian, or they're both LGBT Native women who died from COVID.
Yes, exactly.
And if we learn, nothing else today, we can take that away.
I think the whole thing is just this really strange exercise in kind of watching in real time on Twitter how liberals co-opt the voices coming out of the left, right? Like, the way that left... You'll see, like, on the left, people are saying, you know, well, in the struggle for prison abolition, we need to center black and POC voices because they are the people who are being the most affected by this issue, right?
Yeah.
You know, and the whole point is to be organizing at the site of the injustice as a way to directly combat it. But when that spirit of centering the voices that are the most affected by these issues kind of bleeds its way into this weird, like, fully online politics with no material backing, and then it's like you can watch in real time the way that it goes from we need to center these voices to we need to pretend to be these voices so that we as white liberals are heard, you know? And it's just like this very perverse kind of
it's very funny how like liberals co-opt terms and make them into just, like, just very weird, bleak things that aren't at all what they were intended to be.
Buzzwords. You know?
Yeah, they're really good at it. They're good at just, like, I'm trying to think, like, what have liberals been saying recently? Like, they call everything, like, problematic. They call everything, like, toxic. Like, and these are, like, real terms that, like, do mean things and, like, should be used in, like, you know, and I mean, again, like, they just absolutely let the right walk all over them with, like, the triggered stuff, and, like, because they did just start using that word for everything, and not, like, genuine PTSD attacks,
yeah,
which is what it's meant for, mm-hmm. You know, they just would say, you disagreeing with me is triggering, you know, and then, you know, I'm sure sexual assault victims loved that,
oh, yeah,
you know, and then it just, from there, it just snowballed into becoming, like, you know, something that, like, literal Nazis just joke about. Because it was a way to own the libs for being, like, stupid and ridiculous about something and not using it the way it's meant to be used.
Yep.
So, like, now nobody can use that word seriously and make anybody think they're in good faith when they're using it. It's a mess, man. It's a mess. Wow, we got to exactly 30 minutes on that article. Very cool.
Oh, well.
Very cool, Kanye.
Thank you, Kanye.
Thank you, Kanye. Very cool. God, that might actually be a good place to go with this. So some of you out there may know that we have an election coming up, supposedly. Nothing about this has felt like a legitimate election at all. But, you know, supposedly we're all going to go cough on each other and cast a vote in just a couple of months here. We have our two senile racist grandpas, and they are ready to throw down, but maybe not. I know there's been a lot of discussion. There may or may not be a debate. And,
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, so that was what I brought up yesterday. Can you mind if I interject on that?
Oh, absolutely, please.
Okay. So I'm getting lunch with my wife and our friend yesterday, and I get a text. I'm not going to name the person. He doesn't have his last name or anything, but let's say his name's Ted. He says, "Hi, it's Ted. I'm a volunteer with Ohio Democrats. Is this you?" And I said, This is exactly what I wrote to him. Yep, but I'm communist, so you'll have a hard time convincing me to go for right-center policies and a pedophile presidential candidate who literally advocates for the same things our incumbent idiot already does. So, he doesn't respond for a little bit, and then he just says back, let me know if you're open to having a conversation with me about the issues at stake in this election. Otherwise, have a good day.
God, you know, the stakes were never high enough to vote for the guy who wanted to, like, have single-payer health care or not destroy the planet totally in 20 years or, like, could kind of accept that, like, we needed to fundamentally change some things about our society and challenge capitalism. You know, the stakes definitely were not too high to push that guy over the finish line.
Yep.
But now that the guy whose brain is falling out of his ears has gotten the medal and is running the next race, all of a sudden, this is apocalyptic shit. But also, it was apocalyptic shit in 2004 when you made us all vote for Kerry, and now the people you told us were going to cause the apocalypse are working for Joe Biden. So,
God. I remember that, too, like the Kerry-Bush election. That was the first election that like I actually was old enough to pay attention to
politics. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And just looking back on it now, how completely fucked up it was.
Oh, God, yeah. It's
ridiculous.
It was, and just like the fact that like he like made his bones as like a Vietnam Veterans Against the War guy, and like they basically just called him a pussy, and he like went back on like everything he had ever believed to capitulate to the center right. And like that trend of capitulation to the center right by Democrats has only gotten more insane. So my prediction for this election, which is where we were headed, is that you know, Biden's probably, you know, he's gonna win, he's gonna eke out a win somehow. We're going to have Biden for 4 years. Maybe he'll eke out another win against another idiot in 4 years. But in 2028, we're going to have to vote for David Duke's head in a jar as the sensible, reasonable alternative to the Republican candidate, Mecca Hitler. That's where I think it's headed. I think it's going to be Mecca Hitler versus David Duke's head in a jar.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I didn't respond to this guy. And I, you know, I blocked him. I was like, oh, shit, I wanted to keep talking to him. But, you know, I kind of wanted to actually have a discussion with this guy and be like, look, man, you know, obviously when you look at Trump and everything he's done and everything we thought he was going to do and basically has actually come true, unfortunately, we're looking at this as a bad thing. And basically any way out of this hole that we're in seems like a great option. But what about in the future when, you know, we're not holding up any kind of actual platform to change anything? The same exact thing is going to happen later on down the road. So why aren't we striving for the better change now?
Right. I mean, like, to me, to really be able to, like, say, and I mean, I get, like, you're so scared of Trump, you're just going to vote for Biden. Like, I'm not going to probably convince anybody who's listening that, like, that you shouldn't do that if that's what you're hell-bent on doing. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, the only thing I can say, really, in response to that is, like, if you fundamentally believe that Donald Trump is a symptom of a bigger problem and is here now because, and doing the things he is doing because the laneway was cleared for him to be able to do that by his predecessors, then what the hell sense does it make to put a guy like Biden in the White House? Because it's just going to get worse if we go backwards. Right?
Like, I mean, it really is. I mean, you look at his freaking voting record, and it was pretty much all right, 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 right. You know, his whole entire political career. And then why did Obama choose him as the running mate? Because he was going to appeal to the right.
Yeah, exactly. So now, Jack, where are you at on this? Do you think that Trump's going to win again? Do you think Biden might eke it out? Like, where's your brain at on this?
I think Trump's going to win again. I really do. I think that Trump's going to win again. We are seeing a 100% repeat of what happened in 2016.
Oh, yeah.
We're seeing these ridiculous polls on MSNBC and CNN that are like, oh, it's Biden by 15 points.
Lulling us into a false sense of security.
Oh, yeah. Know? And that's just going to, all that's going to do is like, yeah, it's going to make the people who, you know, it's going to make some people complacent and it's going to make other people just disgusted. And then the people on the right are just going to vote for Trump anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, you're exactly right. Like, 2016 happened not because all these people showed up to vote for Trump, but because Hillary lost, like, 5% of the youth vote. And, like, all the demographics that the Democrats need to win are going down. And, like, the idea that we're going to make up that ground using, like, neocons in the suburbs is, like, No, they're going to go for the fascist, dude. Why wouldn't they?
So there's a point, something I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on something like this. And I've seen this now come up frequently, and I saw another new one come up today. There's a story of somebody in a Kroger. They saw somebody not wearing a mask, and they went up to the manager. Manager talks to the person not wearing a mask. Person's like, fuck off, I'm not going to do whatever. And so the manager's like, yeah, I talked to them, they can't do anything. And then this person posts the manager's picture all over Twitter, like, get this guy fired because he doesn't care about the safety, da, da, da. And then I've seen personal friends of mine actually post shit like that. And it just goes to show again that liberals, at the end of the day, will just throw the working class under the bus.
Oh, yeah.
Over everything. So you talk about how did Trump win again? Well, it's because he offered some kind of difference, something different to an exacerbated working class. And now here are the liberals again, throwing them right under the bus with all this COVID shit.
Oh my God, yeah.
At the end of the day. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, that's, I think, is a perfect example.
Yeah, where they're absolutely. At. Absolutely. So, John, who do you think is going to win?
It's a fucking coin toss for me. I have no fucking clue. You guys both make really good points. You know, Trump, you know, could just come out and well could be a repeat of 2016. But by the same token, because he's dropped the ball so many fucking times, especially within the last 6 months, so much has happened within the last 6 months because of COVID, and I'm just completely exhausted from it. Seeing everything that's going on, especially like yesterday. Just yesterday, him basically coming out saying, yes, I'm gutting Medicare and Social Security if I get reelected next term.
Yeah, and he doesn't even care. And you would think, like, that would be people in his base he needs.
Right,
like,
exactly.
Who the hell even knows anymore,
right, but,
man?
But the people who benefit the most from that right now, the people who are actually on, you know, Medicaid and Social Security, are already right leaning, and they're not gonna budge left an inch, so they're still just gonna vote for him anyway.
Right, but you know, that actually made me think that like maybe that might swing some of those older conservative voters who would be like, yeah, fuck it, Biden, I guess, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you would think it would. You would really think it would, but because they're all gonna be fixated on Fox News. Fox News isn't gonna spin that any correct way.
No. Of course not, no. And so, and to be clear, like, I absolutely 100% think that Jack's prediction is more likely in some ways than my, I don't know. That was my same thought for a long time. This is just going to be a dead repeat of 2016. But, like, I just don't know with COVID anymore. I don't know who's going to show up. I don't know who's not going to show up. I don't know if Trump is at least pissed enough of his base off that even if they still proudly say they're, you know, whatever, maybe they just don't show up that day. I don't know. I think it really is a coin toss. It's clearly more of a coin toss than the liberal media is kind of making it out to be.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man.
I don't know. Like, and to go back to like what you brought up, the guy who texted you to, you know, try and kind of grassroots organize for Biden. There's not a lot of that going on.
No, there's not.
No.
There's no, I have not received any phone calls from the, I mean, there was a report, and this was a couple of months ago, but that even after Sanders had conceded the nomination and Biden was, you know, basically the guy, that they didn't have an auto dialer for his campaign. Like a month after that had happened, there were no phone calls going out. Nobody was organizing for him. There was no groundswell effort at all. And it kind of made me think, like, are the Democrats trying to throw this election?
Maybe.
And I think that they are. I think that by putting a guy like Biden up there who is so easy to attack, I mean, this is a guy who is on record back in the, you know, 60s and 70s saying that segregation or separate but equal was just better for everybody. You know, this is that guy. It's so easy to attack.
It works
him.
For Corn Pop. It works for me.
Right. He is such a paper target, and it's so easy to attack him. It's almost like they don't want him to win.
No, and I think it's because they know, and I've been saying this from the beginning. This is, I think, the bigger thing overall. A Sanders presidency is more harmful to institutional Democrats than a Trump presidency.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So they absolutely would rather have a Trump presidency over Bernie. Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I kind of agree, with the Chapo boys and other people who have talked about it, where, like, the one thing I really don't think is going to happen is if Trump loses, I don't think he's going to be able to pull off some kind of an undemocratic way to hold on to power. I know a lot of people are worried about that. There might be some weird bureaucratic way he could do it, maybe, but like, I don't see the kind of people who he would need to make that happen backing him because of the existential threat of like a Joe Biden presidency. However, I think if Sanders was the nomination, they would certainly entertain even the most bureaucratic bullshit reason to like push the election back,
oh, yeah,
or cancel it, or just, I absolutely think they would throw Sanders under the bus in favor of Trump if that was the choice.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, well, and I think that the one of the real dangers for the left in this election is that both of these candidates have already gone on record stating that they want to imprison anarchists, is what they're calling them, right?
Yeah.
Because anarchist is a scary word, but anarchist in 2020 is like terrorist in 2002.
Yeah.
It's anybody who is not in accord with what the administration wants.
Right.
And yeah. I think that we don't have a choice between an administration where, because that's kind of been the harm reduction argument, right? Oh, if we have this Democrat in office, then that gives us breathing room. That makes it so that the state isn't cracking down on us quite so hard, and we can have more room on the streets to organize and to kind of push the movement forward. But we don't even have that in this election. We have two guys that are both saying those people need to go.
Yeah, it really is. Like, I mean, I've tried to explain to even my parents on several occasions, like, how can you sit here and tell me, like, I need to vote for somebody who absolutely hates me, absolutely thinks I'm a detriment to this country, and would absolutely line me up against the wall and put a bullet in my head if they could.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. That's a very tough pitch to make, all because I have the audacity to think that, like, maybe the thing, the economic system actively killing our planet and killing my friends, could be changed, you know, could be different.
Yeah, well, I think that if Biden does get elected, you're actually probably going to see an even harsher crackdown happen on left organizing, probably in about a year or two.
Yeah.
It'll be a year or two after he gets elected, when things calm down. That is when you will see DHS being used exactly as they're being used now, and the courts are upholding what they're doing now. The precedent is being set by Trump for a Biden administration to really clean house on anybody who's been in the streets for Black Lives Matter, anybody who's in the streets for any of the other, you know, like prison abolition or the indigenous pipeline.
Yeah.
Oh, that God, are still, yeah. You know, those people are going to become political prisoners. And that is going to clear the way for whoever comes in after Biden.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say, for example, we have 8 years of Biden and, you know, accompanying environmental degradation and the crisis of capitalism continuing to get more and more acute for the everyday person. And then Mad Dog Mattis runs for president.
Oh, God.
Somebody who actually is an institutional figure, who could get the military behind him, who could do the things that I don't think Trump is quite capable of pulling off that kind of...
And he's certainly fashion enough.
Coup,
yeah.
You know, and but there are so many people out there like that.
Oh, God, yeah.
That are fashy enough that... And, I mean, you talk about... And it, people love Mad Dog Mattis.
Oh, yeah.
People on the right love him. Even my... people who are in my family that I would describe maybe as like center right kind of Democrat voting liberals who are in the military love him. And that is that's the scary thing to me, is if a figure like that comes to the fore that can capture that
would
big broad chunk of that American Overton window. Yeah. That's when fascism is really going to come.
Yeah. Especially after Biden, where you can start, you know, like I said, you know, you get to right through the midterms of the Biden presidency, and then they start fucking with activists and stuff. That's very worrisome. And that's definitely what I'm definitely more scared of what comes after Biden than what comes after Trump in another 4 years.
Because what comes after Trump is just 4 more years of openly looting the treasury.
Yeah.
By everybody.
By any neoliberal.
Right, yeah. You know. And we know what that's about, but right. Oh, goddamn.
I know, and that becomes the really hard question as, like, a leftist. Like, I'm not trying to sound like an insensitive accelerationist. I'm not trying to say, like, this is what I believe necessarily. But, like, it is something worth entertaining that, like, look, man, are we better off with somebody that the media can't get complacent with because of how just boorish he is? are we better off with somebody that people are going to continue to position as the enemy? Or are we better off with somebody who's going to tell everybody to go back to brunch? Like, which kind of seems to be the Democrats' whole message right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, like, what's... Are we better off with four more years of Trump? Or are we better off with any harm reduction Biden can eke in? And I don't know the answer. I don't know if that. I don't know if there is an answer that's any good.
Well, and that's like what I read your the comments that you made to the guy that texted you, and he said, I would like to discuss the issues with you. And I'd be really interested to ask somebody like that, what issues are you talking about?
Right, because if you just want to talk about platform points, we can do a side-by-side with Biden platform points with Trump's platform points. I have a feeling that they're going to be very similar looking at them, unless you want to talk about how Bernie is pushing Biden to go more left on things like, you know, some of those positions he came out talking about with student loan forgiveness, like the most minuscule thing that he could, like, move a centimeter left on about.
Yeah, and he won't, and it's amazing. I mean, I think the fact that, like, the Lincoln Project, that, like, conservative former Bush group is, like, throwing their weight behind Biden, like, that tells me all I need to know about who is going to be in that administration and what kind of policies they are going to be pushing
through. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So that's unnerving, to be sure.
Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest, for me, the biggest issue at stake is the closure of the deportation camp infrastructure on the southern border. I think that is where I get stuck, is that Biden can't even say, we need to close those camps. We need to find a different way to do this. That is not acceptable to have concentration camps on American soil. On the other hand, I also see that if you look at it objectively, that infrastructure was built in the middle of the Texas desert for a reason.
Yes.
And that reason is not proximity. That reason is the same reason why Auschwitz was built in between Poland, Hungary, and Germany. It was right in the middle, where anybody who wanted to come and try and liberate those camps by force would be forced to go through many hundreds of miles of hostile territory in order to get there.
Yes.
And I think that if you look at it objectively, neither camp says that they need to close. Both camps say that they need to expand that infrastructure. And that infrastructure is going to be used against political enemies of the state. It's just a matter of time, especially since Trump has already set up the bureaucratic infrastructure in creating the Office of Denaturalization in Homeland Security. You know, we will revoke your citizenship status and we will deport you to El Salvador if you cross us. And I think that power is already held by the executive branch. It's just a matter of time until people get complacent enough or scared enough to where they won't raise a fuss about it. When people start to disappear into these vans the way that they are now, but they don't come back out in a week.
Yeah.
They just disappear.
They really do. Yeah. They just, they go to some camp in, you know, Southern Texas.
Yeah. They get deported to anywhere south of the U.S.-Mexico border.
I don't even know if it'll be that. I think they'll keep him in those camps. I don't know. And I mean, again, I think it's only a matter of time before these camps become like just straight work camps again.
Yeah.
And they feed the ogre that is American, you know, consumerism and an ever expanding world economy that's not sustainable. They will absolutely send those guys out to the fields to pick things. They will absolutely send those guys into just disgusting, you know. It's a matter of time before Jeff Bezos starts using prison labor in Amazon factories.
Oh, yeah.
And it will be like political leftist prisoners that end up in these camps. So basically what I'm saying is we've spent the last 50 minutes incriminating ourselves. And we're all going on a vacation. Do you like the sun, Jimmy? Man, oh man. Well, I think that pretty much wraps this episode over. We're like a cool 50 minutes. You know, I wanted to do an hour, but we're new to this. And, you know, I probably only have enough content for one more episode. So I think that that's it. I've been Tim, and these have been my co-hosts, John and Jack, and our producer, Ron. We will have social media information up very, very soon. So please check that out once it is. And till next time, on my honor, I will do my best to destroy capitalism, I guess. So, later.